I can picture in my head Chad dancing to this right now. Although I don't know if it's his if it's his first day back from vacation. Maybe the life has already been drained out of him. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe joining us. Hello there, Chad.
Hello, Rich. You'd be right on both counts. I'm actually picturing Dazed and Confused, which is probably a top five movie, and that song's prominent in that.
Yeah.
That's good intro music. Good walk-up.
That's it. Listen, we're trying to take care of you here. How was your vacation?
Busy. Yeah, it was good. Good. Did manage to get up to Portland to see Chris Sale yesterday, which was fun. Watching from the seats rather than the press box, and it was funny. We looked over our shoulder after he came out, and he was out running laps on the football field. There was at Fitzpatrick Stadium behind that.
Yeah,
running laps by himself and looking ticked off. So I don't think he was that thrilled with his performance, but I think the fans got their money's worth.
Yeah, well, I tell you, Red Sox fans got their money's worth this weekend. What a series with the Yankees. Let's start with Saturday, which I thought, oh my gosh, that might be the worst loss of the year, wasting a terrific start from Nathan Eovaldi. It was going so well, and then, boom, just like that, it was over.
Yeah, I think that's why Sunday's was the best win of the season, right? That's
yeah.
32 come from behind wins, and you know, maybe there's a little bit of recency bias there, but I think if you really go down the schedule, that one has to pop out as number one on that list, just because the day before the Yankees had some hope. They came back and you know, down 3-0, Eovaldi pitching great, and Sox needed what, 4 out, and couldn't get them and gave up that 3-run lead. And the Yankees start hearing about, oh, the Yankees are going to be buyers, not sellers, and they get a chance to split the series and get to 7 behind the Red Sox and make a run at this thing. And they got crushed yesterday, soul-crushing loss. 7 no-hit innings down the drain from Hermont, and a reminder that this Red Sox team, even during games that look pretty dire, they don't back down, they don't quit, and we've seen Red Sox teams like this before with pretty happy endings in October, where they just prove resilient time and time again over the regular season. So one more reason to believe that what we've been seeing all season is legitimate, that this is a really, really good baseball team, despite not a ton of star power beyond the first 3 or 4 guys.
And I didn't realize until I read it earlier today that had Hermann been able to finish that thing off, it would have been the first time the Red Sox had been no-hit at Fenway since, I think, 1958.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I remember the I think that was a UMaine when Chris Bosio no-hit him, but that must have been, what, Milwaukee or Seattle or whoever he was pitching for then. And, you know, we've had a few good ones on the Red Sox side, Buckles at Fenway when he came up in 07, and Lester's, and Derek Lowe back in, what, 2001, Lowe's in, what, 2000, Nomo Night, 2001, something like that. So it's they've had a few memories on their side with those recently, but when you no hit for 7 innings against the Yankees and they've got a starter 6 outs away from no hitting you, that feels like a pretty grim day. And in the end, the Red Sox are out there celebrating like they won a playoff game. The Yankees are wondering what direction their season is really going to go in and what they should do here. It was quite a turn of events from Saturday.
Yeah, it sure was. Now the Yankees are 9 games out. I mean, they're out there, and I follow baseball pretty closely. They had guys out there that I might have seen the names, but I didn't know much about them. Greg Allen hasn't done a whole lot. Floreal, the guy they had in right field on Thursday night that I don't think I had ever heard of. It's an interesting team, to say the least. And the Red Sox just keep finding different heroes along the way. And, boy, Kike Hernandez lately is just on fire as a hitter. And then it seems every time they need to score a big run, it's him doing a head-first slide into home plate.
Yeah, he shouldn't be totally unfamiliar to us because he's had some bright lights with the Dodgers the last couple of years, you know, winning the World Series last season and usually being in the playoff mix. But he was a role player, but always an energy guy and someone you could say, if that guy ends up on the team I root for, I'm going to like him. He just seems like somebody who cares about winning and does a lot of things to help the team, even if he may not be a big batting average guy. He's not going to hit 20 home runs or anything like that, but a kind of a glue guy, like you say in basketball. He's somebody who helps fill a lot of different voids on the roster, and He always plays hard, always hustling, pretty smart base runner, good arm in the outfield, pretty good second baseman. So that, for 2 years and $14 million, is looking like a really good signing by Chaim Bloom, especially when you look. And you know, I'm very pro Jackie Bradley, but what do you get from the Brewers? 2-26, something like that. And Hernandez has been a much, much better all-around player this year than Bradley's been for the Brewers. So one more case of Chaim Bloom seeing something in a player that maybe the fans weren't quite sure about. And I know, you know, we've talked about Ted Lasso on this show before, Rich. The thing is, you know, one of the things about that show is be curious and not judgmental. And I think that's kind of the way we have to look at the Red Sox. When Bloom brings in a player that we don't know much about, we got to ask why they what they see in this guy and why they like this guy, rather than saying, "Oh, this guy stinks," because chances are they recognize something that we haven't seen yet, and it's going to end up being a nice, pleasant surprise.
Jaron Duran, a guy that did get some hype, at times has been overmatched, but boy, he's got a beautiful swing. He's obviously a terrific defensive player, and when he gets to run the bases, man, he's fun to watch. He can fly.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here the next few weeks and months with him, because you know, he was hitting .270 in Worcester. Wasn't exactly competing for the batting title, but the power is legitimate. I mean, he's 6'2", strong kid, even though he came into baseball with a kind of a slap hitter swing. Strong kid, the power is legitimate, and he runs like Ellsbury, just a burner around the bases. And he kind of sent me looking to see what it was like when Ellsbury first came out, because that's what it reminds me of. Jacoby didn't have that pop until a few years later, and that turned out to be kind of a fluke. But just the ability to make things happen on the bases, it reminds me a little bit of that, the spark that Ellsbury gave the 07 Red Sox when he came up late June, early July that year, and then up for good at the beginning of September. It made me look back to what he did, and he was actually amazing right away. He hit .353 that season, and there was a point where he had been up for a couple weeks, and he was well over .400 still. So Duran hasn't quite gotten off to that kind of start. He's still got things to work on as a ball player. Defensively, he's going to make a mistake here and there just because he's relatively new to the outfield. But he's going to help them win with knocking the ball at the ballpark once in a while and scoring from first base on a shot into the gap and those sorts of things that make you think he could be a really good player down the road and help them get to where they want to get this year.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, you've seen Chris Sale in person. How much longer do you think? How far are we away from a return to Fenway?
Well, this is a heck of a lot better version of Chris Sale than the last one we saw with the Red Sox in 2019, where I think he was 6-11, 4.40 ERA. We knew something was wrong, that he wasn't right, and that it felt like Tommy John probably was going to be in his future because he had heard that his whole career anyway, just the way he throws the ball. But he hit 96. Slider, changeup had these kids looking like they had never seen anything like that in their life and maybe reconsidering that they should ever try to play baseball, because that's what all major league pitchers look like. But the kid who hit the home run off him, he gave up 6 hits in 3-plus innings. Kid who hit the home run off him just guessed right. He sat on the changeup, he got the changeup and closed his eyes and hit it out of the ballpark. So wasn't one of those cases where he threw a fastball in a bad spot or anything like that. He just kid had a swing for the ages for him. So it was really interesting to look at that lineup that Harrisburg had, though. They had almost entirely left-handed hitters in the top half of the lineup, and I can't remember seeing a guy's batting average well above .200. It was not a murderer's row that he was facing, and he made them generally look completely overmatched when, you know, he started mixing up his pitches and things like that. He did look kicked off afterwards, but that's not new for Chris Sale. Guy's a super competitor.
And I know people were riding him a little bit about the nutritional aspect of his return, but I think that's great news, because this is a guy who, I don't know, always appeared a little bit fragile out there. Anything he can do that mentally is going to make him feel stronger, I'm all for that.
He's one of those guys who can eat anything he wants to not gain weight. So he could have afforded changes to his diet like he's made. It's probably not going to make him look much different because he's he's still 6'6 and about 140 pounds. He's obviously going to have better stamina. He's probably going to feel better. And anything he can do to enhance who he is as a pitcher at this point in his career and maybe increase his longevity deeper into his 30s, it's a wise thing for him to do. And, you know, one thing we've gotten to know about Sale in the time he's been with the Red Sox is he really cares about being a great team. He can be on the mound every fifth day when it's his turn, and just the ultimate team guy. I'm dealing with him in spring training the last few years, not this year, but before COVID hit last year and the season before that. He's one of those guys who he'll give you nothing when he's talking about himself, except it's after a start. He's really candid after a start about how he did, especially if he was bad. But if you want to ask him about Jackie Bradley, Mookie Betts defensively, or whoever, Renfro and Hernandez or Duran or whoever now, he would absolutely rave about his teammates and give you really informative, helpful stuff. So I just think this is a guy who, having him back for the Red Sox, is going to help him in the rotation, obviously. Having a guy like that in the clubhouse, just a complete competitor and winner, is going to have a real impact too.
And obviously getting Sale back is going to be better than anything you could get at the trade deadline. But that doesn't mean they won't be shopping around. Would they like to get some bullpen help and someone to play first?
Yeah, I mean, the Rizzo thing, Anthony Rizzo is really interesting because he was drafted by the Red Sox in 2007, got up to Portland. They traded him an Adrian Gonzalez deal before the 2011 season, and DOF seen Jed Hoyer. Jed Hoyer basically chased him around trying to get him. Hoyer had him in San Diego. First thing he did when he got to the Cubs was trade for him. And he was a cornerstone guy in that 16 World Series championship team. It's weird what's happened with the Cubs, where Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and all those guys, it looks like they might build a little mini dynasty. It just hasn't happened. And some of those guys have regressed. And Rizzo fits into that mold. He's 23 homers, 60 RBIs over the last 2 years, which is basically almost 162 games. But he could help the Red Sox now, even as a regressed player at 31 years old. He's still a Gold Glove first baseman. Another great clubhouse guy who I think would really fit into the culture that they have right now. And that's an obvious area of need. Dalbec is a promising power bat, but it hasn't really happened for him this year. He's got to make better contact. And they could use a left-handed bat over there. So I would like to see them get Rizzo. We'll see what the cost is and who they're bidding against. But to me, that would be number one priority. And I think Bloom, too, will go out and get somebody we're not even thinking of, but some guy with a great slider that has lit it up in AAA and hasn't got a chance in the majors or something like that. And he'll add a piece or two to the pitching staff and probably somebody who we've never heard of who ends up helping.
Yeah, he'll go get some utility guy that will fill the role that Arroyo had been playing, and the guy will hit 370 down the stretch, and you'll say, where did that come from?
Yeah, it's really uncanny, and there's a type there. I mean, it's Arroyo was a first-round pick and a really highly thought-of prospect. He was the number one prospect in the Longoria trade when the Rays traded their first truly great player. Arroyo was the guy that got back, and he hit in the minors. He just never could stay healthy. And I think that is a kind of approach that Bloom is going to take to finding guys to fill out the quality depth on this roster. Those guys are a high pedigree, and for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked out for them, but they're worth another shot. It's kind of like what Dan Duquette used to do, go out and get a Troy O'Leary or somebody like that who was a good prospect but never quite got the break they needed. And he ended up getting a pretty good player out of it. I think Bloom will make a couple more of those moves before the season is over.
Have you been able to find what you want from the Olympics, either on NBC or your valuable Peacock app?
Yeah, I do have Peacock for work. I actually watch Dan Patrick pretty much every morning on the non-subscription version of it, but I got the subscription one for the Olympics just to be able to watch a basketball. And, I guess that's a good thing about me being a media writer is you can try to get away with expensing some of this stuff. And I can rationalize this one by saying, well, if I didn't pay for it for work, I probably wouldn't be watching it. So we'll see how that goes over pretty well. But so I started to get into it a little bit, and we'll see if the momentum picks up. The ratings haven't been great so far, and I know there's a lot of people who don't think they should be there even be doing this right now. But I tend to get into the moment when you start seeing some exciting events that tonight. And I think it'll catch on, and the numbers will get better here over the next couple weeks.
You mentioned Ted Lasso. Have you watched season two yet?
I've seen 8 episodes. Yes, I begged Apple for screeners.
I realized
last year that they had sent me a link to the screeners for season one. I completely ignored it. I was like, the soccer coach in London? No way. The football coach in London. And then, we got into it a couple weeks ago. A couple months ago now, my family. And just it might be the best show I've ever watched. I don't think that's hyperbole. I think I like it more than anything. Here at The Office, anything like that. And so I asked them, hey, you sent me screeners last year. Can I get them this year too? And they sent 8 out of the 12, and they're still unfinished. But I can report that it hasn't lost anything. It's as good as it was in season one, and that is a heck of a high standard.
Well, it is indeed. Well, I'm waiting because I watched it all. My wife didn't have interest, and then I kept raving about it. So now she started watching. I'm watching it a second time with her, but we'll get all caught up and then start on season two. And I can't wait. I agree with you. I don't know. I've had other shows that I've loved, but I don't know that I've had shows that made me feel so good.
Well, this show, I think, among other things, when I watch it with my 14-year-old son all the time, almost every night, just reruns and favorite scenes and things like that. And it feels like everything was written before they started filming anything, including in season two, where there are callbacks and lookbacks on things. There's very little moment in season one, or you see it at the end of season one, a callback to something like from the third episode. And it feels like the entire thing, and I think they're going through seasons, feels like the entire thing has been laid out ahead of time, and they're just kind of revealing what they've written and planned out all along to us right now. And it's refreshing and funny, and teaches you all how to swear in all kinds of different ways, and everything I've looked for in a TV show.
I can't wait for season two to get into it. Get my wife to hurry up and get caught up. Chad, we thank you as always. Hope the rest of your work week goes as well as day one. Obviously made better by being here and then talking to the guys in Portland to what next hour, right?
Yes, it'll be much meaner to me than you are, Rich. That's how it always goes. I have a nice conversation with you, and then I get bullied down here in Portland.
Well, it's a deal. Javier sends me a little cash to loosen you up so they can have at it.
Yeah, I figured it was something like that. Payola, something.
You got it. Whatever it takes. Hey, thanks, Chad. We'll catch you again soon.
All right, Rich. Take care.
Chad Finn, Boston Globe on Downtown.